Welcome to Scrappy ABM. This is your podcast with practical playbooks that don't break the bank. In this podcast, we dig into the exact playbooks that ABM practitioners are using today to get their first ABM program off the ground. We'll dig into how they're using their current tech stack in order to create scrappy programs that rely more on creativity than new technologies. So if you're looking for how to get ABM off the ground in your organization in the next 90 days, let's dive into this episode. Hello and welcome to this episode of Scrappy ABM. This episode is going to be a little bit different. It's actually just a re-release from another podcast that I was on. We love the content, wanted to make sure you got it. If you like this content, we actually dropped the show just in the show notes below, so you can go check out all of their content. But for now, I hope you enjoy this episode of Scrappy ABM.
Mason, thank you so much for taking the time to be on the show today. And I just have to say that you have really emerged over the last couple of years as one of the top experts in our space, and I would say within B2B SaaS or B2B technology in ABM and all things surrounding. So really appreciate it. I know we met, I think it was last year. God, we're in 2025 right now, in New York, if I believe we were at Golden Hour, and we shared a mutual customer, and then we hung out again in Boston for HubSpot. So really appreciate it. Real quick, why don't you just, you know, tell folks a little bit about your career background and how'd you become this like expert?
First, you're overly kind. And when you just post on LinkedIn for a really long time and just don't stop, inevitably it kind of works out. So I have the perfect hack for like how to get 21,000 followers is just post every day for like 5 years. Can guarantee it might work. Awesome. So
note to self.
The career journey, long and short, started as a full funnel AE. So like source my own deals, close my own pipeline, manage my own accounts. And that was a super hard job. So from the get, I was account focused in nature, but just didn't know what I was doing. From there, transitioned to run marketing at a fintech company. So very account focused in nature. That was where somebody first explained to me the idea of account-based marketing, to which my immediate thought was, well, what is everybody else doing? Because it just didn't, like, hadn't occurred to me to do anything else. And then I recognized how little I knew because I didn't really didn't know anything. So I ended up running marketing at an agency. So my job was to learn about account-based marketing, teach account-based marketing, and then say at the end of every webinar, by the way, if you need help with this, we do this. And that did that for a few years. Ended up transitioning back into a sales role and actually sold account-based marketing programs at that agency on a global scale. And then transitioned out of that organization to run marketing at a sales enablement company and then launch Scrappy ABM. So for quick context, my entire career, other than the weird fintech stint, has been selling marketing, selling, selling, marketing, marketing, or marketing, selling. So that's my career in a nutshell.
I love it because I love marketers who are salespeople because, you know, we've had this debate for, God, you know, I don't know, as long as I've been in SaaS, but yeah, right, about sales and marketing and alignment and people fighting. And, you know, I'm kind of at the point where I think that there's a little bit of human like relationship dynamics that we need to like talk a lot about. And yeah, like the tools and the strategies and the fields in the CRM and so on and so forth are important. But if the humans are not aware and willing to go to bat for each other, you know, it's only going to go so far. But anyways, that may be another podcast for another day. I wanted to dig into the steps of planning a scrappy ABM campaign. If you had at a high level to think about the planning, the execution, and then the management and understanding results and those sort of things at a high level. And for the folks out there, real quick, you can absolutely follow Mason and Scrappy ABM if you want to implement these things. So I got to do the plug here because they're awesome. And I just, you know, think everyone should work with y'all. But without further ado, why don't we dive into the steps?
Appreciate the shout out. And for anyone that doesn't know, we have a podcast as well. It's called Scrappy ABM. And there's about 130 some odd episodes at this point that will dig into this topic from literally 130 some odd different angles. So to get started with an ABM program, first, I'd question why you're building an ABM program. And it is a buzzword, and it is a trend, and it is a term that gets thrown around a lot. So before you even consider actually like investing a ton of time, energy, and effort, there's some quick qualifications that I always like to give people of, are you even a good fit to build an ABM program? First, I think this goes without saying, but like B2B. So if you're not a B2B organization, so if you're direct to consumer or B2C for whatever reason, like don't do an ABM program. Just does not, doesn't make any sense for a thousand reasons, but that's the starting point. Second is a dedicated sales team. So we have many founders that come inbound to us and are like, we'd like to build an ABM program for our organization. I was like, you should not, because it's very process oriented and founders by their nature are not process oriented people. And I'm not trying to like, I'm a founder. I'm not a process oriented person. I've learned processes. I've learned how to become more process oriented, but like left to my own devices, I'm not. That's why I'm a founder. Like I'm good at building new things and then delegating and then going and building something else. That's my job. So dedicated sales, because you need someone that owns it and is able to follow a process repeatedly. Next would be specifically your average contract value. Typically, we're looking at an ACV of $50,000 or greater as the minimum threshold. There's an asterisk on that, and I'll come back to that here in just a moment. Next would be then specifically like product market fit. Like if you do not have an established product market fit, this doesn't work. I was on a podcast earlier today and the person, as he and I were talking through ABM, they outlined like ABM is not actually the place to experiment with your best fit customer. Like you should know we serve this kind of customer with these specific products incredibly well with these proof points. Because then you can get really targeted and specific and you know it's going to work. Like that's the benefit to ABM. It's like you get more of your best customers. So you don't know who your best customer is because you don't have product market fit. You shouldn't be doing ABM. Sorry, I get really passionate about this really quickly.
I love it. Let's do it.
The final component is a longer sales cycle. So we typically look at about a 90-day sales cycle because a part of ABM is like actually shortening your sales cycle. So ideal situation is you're not doing like a 30-day, you know, sales cycle, but typically you're looking at something longer. Ideally, also, there's an expansion component. So you actually can build an ABM program to expand your customers. And the last, what should be most obvious, but sometimes isn't, is clear market focus. Like, who do we actually serve? Which is where the asterisk on the 50K ACV comes back in. We had a client that built a software specific to government-run utilities that were over 50,000 people served by that utility. So it's a compliance software for like that niche of a niche of a niche of a niche. They had 500 potential customers. 500. So like at that point, why would you do anything else? So if you've got a super clear market focus and a very niche product, then ABM is probably a good fit. So again, before you like think through anything else, I'm going to save you a ton of time right now. If you don't match that criteria, maybe you want to hang out, but like I don't have anything else for you. So if you do match that criteria, it's going to be a super helpful episode for you.
You touched on a lot of different things, but I wanted to double click on the dedicated sales team, right? And the reason why is, boy, I just see, and this basically points to what I was talking about in terms of alignment before. I see historically like marketers, typically on the demand gen side, I know there's ABM marketer titles and so on these days, but time and time again, I see this like complaint, which is I am running all these ads and doing all these ABM campaigns here, sales, and sales is complaining and not doing anything about it and not following up properly and all that good stuff. And then of course, on the other side, reps are going, you're just sending me, you know, unqualified junk and this and that and the other thing. Any tips around, and I know this is nuanced, right? It's hard to kind of speak to it and you know, a couple minutes here, but maybe at a high level, like how can you better align those teams so you have that dedicated team that is maximizing all the stuff that marketing is doing? And then I think it's a bit of a cheat code that you've been an AE and a salesperson in the past, right? So you understand that side of the fence, but also marketers will understand this is not just about like running some ads and that's it, right? On LinkedIn, right? You know, or retargeting stuff, et cetera. This is about a comprehensive, fully aligned effort.
Yeah. I mean, at this point, I have an unfair advantage being a business owner because I like deeply understand our P&L and our LTV to CAC ratio. And like, when you actually look at the idea of best fit customer, best fit should be defined by what has the highest LTV to CAC ratio, meaning like you get the most money for the amount of money it takes you to get this customer. So if you can figure out what that is as a marketer, and then take that to your leadership team and say, hey, and granted, like most marketing teams will not be able to get that information on their own. They've got to get that from finance. They've got to get that a little bit from the success team, from retention. Like, so that's where it's cross-functional. So I give you that context. first, because what sometimes happens, to your point, is marketing will deliver a best fit customer that sales doesn't do anything with. And what I have found, crazy concept, sales is money motivated. So if sales isn't doing their job, and forgive me for saying it that bluntly, but sales job is not, like, it's hard. I want to be super clear. Like, I sit in a sales seat right now. I'm a founder-led sale. We actually just hired an AE. Today is their first day. So, like, this is the first time in, like, 3 years that I'm not, like, selling myself. So, like, I get it. But my job as a seller and for sellers is relatively simple. We have meetings with people that are ideally qualified. We figure out what they want so we can align that to what we sell. And then we close a deal. Like, that's about it. And that's, again, there's a thousand things that go into that. So I'm going to, like, like, I don't want that to sound like it's not important. It's incredible. It's the lifeblood of a business. But also, it's a simple role. So if sales isn't doing their job, they probably aren't compensated to do it effectively, which is, like, not something that marketing can solve. So again, that's where I think that this is why a lot of this has to happen at an executive leadership level. And I know that everybody says that, but I want to peel back the layers on why. And it's specifically tied back to typically compensation as, like, one of the number one reasons that marketing and sales aren't aligned. Because, like, of course, if sales doesn't get paid to do the thing that marketing wants them to do, why would they do it? That's why sales is here. They're money motivated. So that's something I always try to bring to light, because many marketers don't ever think, oh yeah, I don't know how my sales team is compensated. So I, like, give this idea that ABM is going to make you more money, but I don't know how they make their money. And as a result, I can't, like, do the math with them to help them see that their commissions will increase based on them closing these specific deals. Cause sometimes it might not, at which point that's a massive problem for the business. So that's my soapbox.
Awesome. All right. So let's say we are a marketer out there who has gone through that checklist. They've said to themselves, okay, these are the things that Mason recommended. We seem to check the box on all of them. Now we're going to start to think about, like, operationalizing or starting to execute this actual campaign. And this includes all the cross-functional meetings, et cetera. What do we do now?
Yeah, great question. We think through all ABM programs in two core frameworks. So framework one is what we refer to as the account progression model. This is also referred to often as a buyer's journey. And for everybody that just fell asleep, I promise it gets exciting. Bear with me. Framework two is the 4D framework, which is consistent of data, distribution, destination, and direction. The easiest way that I like to think about it is the account progression model is your strategy. The 4D framework are your tactics. So the goal for us is to actually get, like, really tactical. And so people are like, oh, I actually know what to go and do. So here's where I recommend everybody start. You create a chart. So you write down on one side, like, actually sheet of paper, you can do this right now. Awareness, initial engagement, meaningful engagement, marketing qualified account, sales qualified account, opportunity, re-engagement. So those are the stages of the account progression model. You can rewind it 15 seconds if you didn't get it. And then across the top of the sheet of paper, you write data, distribution, destination, and direction. So that's one sheet of paper. On a second sheet of paper, write down everything you're doing from a marketing perspective. So is it podcasts? Is it SEO content? Is it LinkedIn? Is it paid media programming? Is it search ads? Like, what are all of the things that you're currently doing? So go ahead and write all those things down. And then what you're going to do is you're going to take all the things you're currently doing, events, happy hours, whatever, and you're going to then say, where does this fit in our account progression model? So is this generating awareness so that people even know that we exist? Is this generating initial engagement? And I define initial engagement as we can viably measure that this account has a problem. It's like, do we know that they're exploring around a problem? Like, how do I build an ABM program? Or my ABM program isn't delivering. How do I improve my open rates, my click-through rates, my meeting booking rates? Like, those kinds of queries or questions or content that they're exploring, that's a problem. Meaningful engagement is, how do we know that they're exploring viable solutions? So viable solutions would be things along the lines of, like, ABM agencies. Great. Now they're exploring or ABM tools. We often actually come up against tools. We're like, we're thinking about buying this tool or buying you guys. What should we do? And I'm like, do you have people to run the tool? Oh, no, your bandwidth strength? Well, Probably should hire an agency. Anyway, MQA, how do we know that they understand the unique value of our organization? Most easily defined is they viewed our product pages, our pricing page, and our schedule a call page, but didn't book a call. It's MQA. From there, SQA. They've actually booked a meeting and they're qualified from sales based on timing and budget, because that's the only qualification that you need from a BANT perspective. Because ideally, you've already known need because you targeted them, and you already know authority because you went after the right people. So when you do that first call, it's timing and budget. Do you have the money to solve this now? And is this a big enough problem to solve right now? Then you have a real opportunity, which you then work as a sales pipeline. You should actually run in pipeline programming. And essentially, you use your sales pipeline stages as a second account progression model to then figure out how to help your sales team effectively multi-thread the multiple people within the decision committee. So you have trigger-based programs that get triggered based on the different stages in the sales pipeline. That's a whole separate podcast, but just as a heads up. And then the last thing that you do, which is what most people miss, is re-engagement. So you actually have programs that are designed to keep people engaged because it wasn't right time when they have budget right now, but they will eventually. So if you looked at all of your tactics and you figure out where they fit in that model, that's step one. And what most people find is they already are doing like 60 to 70% of what's needed to get an ABM program launched. So you actually have this big sigh of relief. You're like, oh, I'm not as far away as I thought I was. So pause there for a moment. That's step one.
Got it. How much of the focus should be on trying to shake out the folks who are in market, right? There's been a lot of talk about signals and that good stuff right now, because you did speak to like this idea of nurturing, right? So there may have been folks who it wasn't the right time. Maybe they're still learning about the pain that you solve, and maybe the category, maybe it's a new category. How much should you balance that in terms of your effort?
Yeah. It's a great question. Depends on where you are in your journey. So I recommend everybody Google brand building versus sales activation, which you should see a chart come up from a book called The Long and Short. And this book did a ton, like these authors did a ton of research on the balance of brand building versus sales activation. Another framing you can use is demand generation versus demand capture. And when you think about the appropriate budget allocation, it's about the 60-40 split. So 60% of your time should be focused on brand building. 40% of your time and budget and energy should be focused on sales activation. So that is like the data-backed approach. But when I say that, that sounds really great in theory. What I have found is when you don't have pipeline, you should spend 100% of your time on sales activation, because like you won't exist. Crazy. So if you don't have budget, or sorry, if you don't have pipeline and you don't have money, when I talk about the idea of like 60% of your time should go towards brand building, you're like, that's cool. I won't exist in 3 months. Or like, I'm going to get laid off. What I have found is that marketers can do whatever they want when the pipeline is filled. So if you have poor pipeline right now, you should run a closed loss program, an event activation program, a website re-engagement program, a customer win-back program, and a customer referral program right now. You can do that right now. Or you should look at your hard-bounced email addresses to see which of your customers have recently left their job and gone to a different company. You should essentially do like a bootstrapped duct tape champion tracking program. All of that you have in your existing database right now. So you can do that, and that will help you to build pipeline. And then once the pipeline is filled and those processes run repeatedly, and I said it in like 45 seconds, but that's a 6 month endeavor. Like that right there takes 6 months to build all that out. But once that's running, then marketing's job should be to fill more of the brand awareness type programs, and you redistribute the time, energy, and effort, because you've now actually given sales some repeatable playbooks that are evergreen type playbooks that should be able to consistently build the pipeline. So that's how I think through the balance is like, if you don't have pipeline right now, you don't have pipeline playbooks, you should do that, because otherwise you don't have a business. But once you've done that, you should build the brand long term. Final example in real practice, like Scrappy ABM is an 18-month-old business. We generated about $8 million in pipeline in the past 18 months, and I've closed $2.7 million. So like pretty good. In the first 3 to 4 months, it was all activation. I went to my network of people, and I said, hey, I launched a business. I don't know if this is even the right framing, the right packaging. Would you just be willing to like let me pitch you and you tell me if it's good or not? Not to buy, I just need market research and market feedback. Message 150 people, 50 people said yes, 10 of them became customers. And I didn't sell them, to be clear. I actually wanted their feedback. And then the other 40, like 20 of them have already sent referrals my way. was all activation. It's just like, I need money right now so I can build a brand. And then once I had the financial foundation from recurring revenue and a good pipeline generation program, I don't do any activation now because we just keep getting people that come and want to buy from us that are all good fit customers. I focus almost exclusively on brand building and content and education. And like, I got the license to build the brand because I built the pipeline. Like that's the balance. So again, that's the theory and philosophy. In practice, meaningful engagement, MQA, SQA, those are all demand capture. So like when you build out your full account progression model, if you don't have pipeline right now, just start building playbooks there. And then what you should inevitably do is then move up to where it's an initial engagement. So like that's how you actually do it in practice.
I love that you focused a lot on, and do that right now for Scrappy, on the brand building stuff. You know, people have been talking a lot about the impact of podcasts on ABM and just brand building. I think we understand, well, hopefully most of us understand the impact on brand building, even though like attribution, you know, junkies are like, you know, pulling their hair out and so on. And I feel like at least what I've observed over the years is that in the beginning, you know, leadership might go, okay, yeah, we got some money. Maybe they just raise a round, whatever, they'll throw it at a podcast. And then when things get tight, because they always do at some point, they start to kind of go, all right, you know, well, we're not going to invest in that anymore, you know, because it's not a traditional demand capture, right? Or demand generation exercise. What would you tell those leaders who are like thinking about investing in the podcast, or even those folks who are just not seeing the impact on the brand? And then if you can just add the ABM piece, how do you actually like mix in? Because I know for the folks out there, Scrappy ABM can help you with your podcast and your ABM campaign. So, and by the way, Mason did not put me up to this. I am just such a fan of the brand and what they're doing.
Well, I appreciate it. And I give a odd answer on this one potentially, so forgive me, but like, I just learned this framework from, I went to acquisition.com workshop in December, and I have so much shiny object syndrome because there's so many things I could be doing. And they just made it really simple. It's like more, better, new. That is every decision in every business. You can do more of something. You can do it better. You can do something new. So if you've not done a podcast, like don't start a podcast if you're like, we need to fix our pipeline problem right now. Because like you probably are doing things that generate pipeline. You probably need to do more of that or do it better. And then like new should be the last option. Because new, another way of thinking through it is like problems and opportunities. If you fix problems, you have guaranteed returns because you know that something was broken and you know how to fix it. If you go after opportunities, there is no guaranteed return because it's new. You don't know if it's going to work. It might have a massive payoff, but you don't know. But guaranteed payoffs, fixing problems every time. So like, honestly, the answer is I am super heavy into podcasts because I've been podcasting for 4 years. And like that was how I knew how to grow a business, is through thought leadership, through content, through building relationships, through podcasting. And like, I've got a great post-production process that keeps a guest engaged and like converts guests. Just know how to do that. I can help people build that. That's super fun. I have a great time. But if you're looking at it as like, we got to fix our pipeline problem like right now, you should probably do more and better. And then you look at new as a way to scale or invest in a new opportunity that has the potential to pay off. Now, final caveat to all of that, you can think about more, better, and new in like a variety of ways. So like if you have a killer content program and you're like, we should do this better. Well, how do you do it better? Podcast might be a better way of scaling your content program. Or our founder is an avid networker, but it's a massive time suck on his calendar and we need to make that more efficient. Great. Podcasting is a better way of networking and making a lot of other things happen as a result of that networking. So again, you can frame it in a variety of ways, but if you're just like, we've got budget and we would like to explore podcasting as an experiment to fix our pipeline problem, probably don't like fix the other things you already know are broken and then come back to podcasting when you need a new vehicle, which is probably like way later than you think. Mm.
Awesome. More, better, new. I love that. I'm gonna pray on that tonight. So I know we're coming up on time here. I really, really appreciate it. But real quick, let's say we have planned, we've executed, and folks have gone to Scrappy ABM's podcast and website and all the content, so they've learned more. Maybe they've hired you, and now they want to dig in to understand kind of like, you know, measurement and results and so on in like, you know, 2 minutes or so.
Yeah.
If you can give folks a little bit of advice around like how to actually think about that.
So again, we'll go back to the example of you've laid out all of the current tactics that you're currently running in the context of an account progression model. That's where the second framework comes in, which is the 4D framework of data, distribution, destination, and direction. So to break that down further, data is a mix of targets and triggers. So who are we going after? And then why are we reaching out? Based on both targets and triggers, that creates personalized, nuanced, specific messaging. So it's not, these are all the fintech companies that are in the Fortune 5000. But it's these are the fintech companies in the Fortune 5000 that have done this intentional action. And as a result, we respond in this way. That's targets plus triggers that creates messaging. Data. Next is in distribution, which is just how do we plan to get in front of these people? Is it an ad program? Is it an email? Is it whatever? Distribution. Next is in destination, which is what are we sending them to? That's the content. I'll give a plug back. AssetMule is great for that. Lastly is direction, which is just how do we plan to track it? So if you know who you're going after, why you're reaching out, what you're saying to them, how you're getting in front of them, what you're sending them to, and how you plan to track it, you have a repeatable process. So to answer your question on like, how do we optimize for results? You fix each of the four Ds at every stage of the program, because if you continue to make all of those components better and better and better, you should then end up seeing better results over time. Now, that's also why I like the direction component, because we've seen people measure awareness level programming on revenue, which is dumb because they don't know that you exist. Like the goal for awareness is that they know that you exist. So like if somebody's never heard of Scrappy ABM and they listen to this podcast, great awareness play. That's all I wanted from this. If they never buy from me, probably fine. Like I just wanted them to know about me because they can't buy from me. They don't know about me. It's like that's awareness. So it's also then aligning the stage of the program to how we want to measure success and then optimizing that the whole way through.
Awesome. Thank you so much, brother. I really, really appreciate it. For the folks out there, go to scrappy.com. You can check out the services, case studies, of course, the podcast and all the wonderful content. And of course, follow Mason and Scrappy on LinkedIn, would you say is the best channel?
Yeah, LinkedIn, podcast. We've got a newsletter. So if you go to scrappyabm.com/newsletter, you can get all of our stuff delivered to your inbox every single week.
Awesome. Well, have a wonderful day and thanks so much again.
Thank you. Thank you so much for listening to this episode of Scrappy ABM. If you're looking for more content just like this, I highly recommend you go subscribe to our newsletter. We release weekly playbooks so that you have the actionable ways in which you can start to build an ABM program today. Just go to scrappyabm.com/newsletter to subscribe. And if you enjoyed this episode, we'd really appreciate if you'd leave a 5-star review and hit the notification bell so you never miss an episode. I look forward to seeing you in the next one.